As religious people, we believe in transformation. We believe that part of the life of faith is transformation. And we may believe or have moments of significant, all of a sudden, transformation. And we certainly have longer, gentler, ongoing moments of times of transformation. We believe in transformation. But to think about what transformation entails is not something that we always do. Consider, if you will, Saul, who is undoubtedly thinking of himself as a defender of the faith. And he encounters Jesus, who says, "Why do you persecute me?" And I'm sure that hearing the word persecute applied to him was painful. Sometimes transitions and transformation are painful. That's the way it is sometimes. And sometimes we're devoted to defending something that we need to let go of. That's part of transformation too. So Saul is, confronted by Jesus, knocked off his horse, made blind, and sent to hang out for a few days. That's a hard part of transformation. The hanging out part, the waiting part, the reflecting part. Sometimes a part of transformation, indeed I would say all the time, a part of transformation is waiting and reflecting. Waiting for the new thing to take shape in our lives. Waiting for the transition to be over, the change to be done. Paul has to hang out for a while. And then he gets to see. And then he has to hang out some more and learn a little bit. And then he starts to proclaim. And it is interesting that what happens to Saul is a set of opposites. He starts out as the true defender of the Jews. And he meets Jesus and he becomes the sharer of Christ with the Gentiles. Talk about a change. The complete opposite. Because sometimes that's what transformation does, is it really changes us in a dramatic way. But sometimes it's more gradual than that. Not all transformations are that way. The disciples have seen Jesus twice since Easter morning. The first time he appears, they see him that evening, and they haven't seen him now. It's been 3 weeks. And in that waiting time that often comes after a transformation starts, that time of waiting and reflecting, that time when you're not quite sure what to do with yourself, they decide to try to go backwards. They were all fisher folk before Jesus called them, and they try to go back to that. Peter says, "I'm going fishing." The others say, "We'll go too." But it doesn't work to try to go back to your old life. Once a transformation starts, you can't go back. It doesn't work. And so they go out on their boats and they fish all night and they catch nothing. And someone appears on the shore. They don't recognize him probably because they were 100 yards off. And he hollers out to them, "You haven't caught anything, have you?" "Gee, thanks for pointing that out, dude." Right? And then he says, throw the net on the other side of the boat. Now, there's a statement that makes no sense. Under the boat, it's all one lake. What's that about? And yet they do it. I think because a part of them felt that it was Jesus. But they didn't know it consciously. So they throw the net on the other side of the boat, and the net is full of fish, and they bring it in, and in the miraculous haul of fish, I love that little line, 153 of them, having barely ever caught one fish, 153 is pretty amazing. So they race into shore, and Jesus feeds them breakfast. They know him in the meal, which we're meant to think of Eucharist. And as they know him in the meal, he talks to them. He feeds them and talks to them. And then he turns to Peter. And three times he asks Peter, "Do you love me?" And those three times give Peter the marvelous opportunity to undo the three times he denied him. So he gives Peter this opportunity to recover from his denials. Gives him the opportunity to say, "I love you. You know I love you." Three times. That's beautiful in and of itself. But then there's another thing that's beautiful about that part of the story, is that Jesus says to him, "Okay, so here's what you do while you wait for me to return. Feed, tend, feed." That's a fascinating direction. And remember, the Gospels were written down, as I've told you before, when people who had actually seen Jesus walking around in the flesh were starting to die. And the church was writing out the stories that they told, and people were collecting them and ordering them to make certain theological assertions about who Jesus is. And so one of the things that they're realizing is, we're going to wait a while till he gets back. I think early on they thought it would be next week. And they realized they had to wait. And so, hearing Jesus say, "Feed and tend people," is a direction for waiting. It's a direction for that time in transformation when we have to wait and reflect and sit. During that time, we're invited to feed and tend God's people, not only because it's good for us in terms of caring for those who are in need to feed and tend them, but also the very act of feeding changes us. It's the way we work on the transformation that's happening in our lives. Feeding and tending others. It's what you do in a transformation. I think when I was reflecting on all of this and thinking about it, it made me think of the story of Noah. And the reason that it made me think of Noah is because the story of Noah in Genesis is a story of sort of a divine reboot of humanity. God decides to sort of start all over again with Noah and his family as a faithful remnant. So they have to learn to be this new humanity that God is starting. They have to be transformed. And God puts them in that boat, and it rains 40 days and 40 nights, but then they're, you know, you got to wait for all that water to go away. And so ultimately they're in the boat for a year. And there's nothing for them to do in that boat for a year but feed and tend the animals. To make a new creation, to make a new humanity, God puts them in a year-long school of nurturing, of feeding and tending. And we know that that's kind of what's going on, because at the end, when it comes time to figure out if they can get out of the boat or not, what does Noah do? He releases birds and watches their natural behavior. Do they come back? Do they come back with a branch? He watches the birds because that's what he's been doing for a year. He's watching the animals and feeding them and tending them. Because God has put Noah and his family in a year-long school of nurturing to help create a transformation in them and in humanity. So when Jesus says, when you're in the midst of a transition and it feels like it's going slowly and you're waiting on me to show up and you're waiting for the transformation to be done and you want to get on with it, be a little still and feed and tend people. That's the best way for you to work on the transformation that's going on in your life. Feed and tend my people. It's a fascinating direction with a long biblical history. And because we are in transition all the time, we're continually being renewed and transformed by the Holy Spirit at work in our lives. It suits us to practice feeding and tending. It's the Easter season, and you've heard me make jokes about Easter is 50 days of church-sanctioned partying. And as fun as it is to say that, the point is it really is 50 days of feasting. And that the feasting is not just the church having a good time, it's actually a spiritual discipline. It is the one that goes hand in hand with the fasting and the giving up in Lent. And we easily forget that. But it's Easter. And this is the last Sunday that we'll hear actual resurrection stories. And you'll see after today, the empty tomb will go away, but we'll continue in the Easter season. We'll continue until Pentecost, and we'll hear stories about things that Jesus said and taught that help us think about living the resurrection life. And we'll wait for Pentecost, the festal conclusion of the Easter season, to get here. And this year we're going to have lots of baptisms at Pentecost. It's going to be an exciting day. And what are we supposed to do while we wait for Pentecost to get here? We're supposed to feast and feed others. Feed and tend my sheep, says Jesus. That's how you wait. That's how you work on transformation. That's the direction that gives rise to Easter as a time of feasting and celebration that lasts for 50 days. So the challenge that the day presents to us, the challenge that these readings present to us, is to go out and really keep Easter, to feast, to celebrate, to invite in friends and neighbors and strangers and others to feast with us, to feed and tend ourselves and others as God's people, and to know that is not just a work of indulgence, but that's actually a part of how God does transformations in our lives. By feasting and tending and celebrating.